All right, Matty, we'll read all about it at rsn.net.au. And David Gately, as you heard by our dogs, welcome, is here. How are you, Gator?
There's not a lot of love from the puppies here. The human element's quite good. But, yeah, the puppies.
Look, they're getting old and grumpy, which is like a lot of people in this current situation. Good to have you back and good to welcome into the conversation, the punting homeschooling, as we've been doing throughout this COVID period. One of the smartest minds when it comes to racing, especially in Queensland, Chris Nelson. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Gator. I'm not so sure about that smartest mind, though. That's probably taking it a little bit too far.
We rang the wrong person then. No, sorry. Don't play yourself down. David Gately said this is a man we need to speak to because with the upcoming Queensland Carnival, for Victorian punters and those who are looking from here, I suppose, there could be some confusion or difficulty in trying to assess your local form versus the form from Victoria, New South Wales. How do you go about it, Chris, and what do you generally find with your local horses versus the calibre of the interstaters?
Well, I generally do find that the interstate horses do have the wood over the locals when we get to carnival time. And it's generally the Sydney horses. We don't see as many Melbourne horses up here as Sydney horses, so yeah, those are bigger stables from Sydney, the Waterhouse Spots, the Snowdens, the Mark Newnhams and the Godolphins, obviously, do generally walk away with most of the major races up here. But, look, I think it's a numbers thing for me. I try and match up the numbers between the local races and the races down south, and generally down south they are stronger. Plus it's the fact of looking at videos and looking at these horses that do come through the Sydney Carnival. I mean, how long have they been up for? Is this an afterthought coming to Brisbane? Have they been targeted to run during the Brisbane Carnival? All that sort of goes into the pot. But as you'll see from most of my tips this weekend, the Sydney horses certainly do get the nod.
You've touched on the clock there, Chris. And obviously, it's a key element for most people's form. I wonder if this this upcoming carnival might be a little different. I mean, there's a couple, especially in the juvenile ranks, with the black shorts, as in the locals, for you guys, the Queenslanders, have put up some outstanding numbers, including Rothfire and Co.
Yeah, Rothfire, Gator, and Got a Kiss, of course, and we've got the filly of Tony Gollins in Isotope, who we saw win its first race by 10 lengths and was beaten by Rothfire last week. But yeah, you might have a good point there. The Atkins this year is an interesting race. Like, we're back to 1,400 metres, but it's one of the most competitive-looking Atkins I've seen for a while. There seems to be a lot of horses heading that way. It's only a week or so away now, but you would have to think that Rothfire is going to be very hard to beat. Certainly, the horse that's been running around in Sydney, is it Makuri, something along those lines? I haven't looked into it in a great detail as yet, but it seems to have some good form as well. And there's a couple going around in the Bill Carter here on Saturday. Race number four, certainly that one of Mark Newnham's, Panna Cotta, which it's got out to a good price. I wouldn't be leaving it out either. But, yeah, I would agree the black shorts might be favoured up here next Saturday in the Atkins.
Yeah, I downloaded my best bets. You've got it, Panna Cotta on top, haven't you, in race four there, the Bill Carter Stakes. Interestingly, Panna Cotta comes through the that Makura race, who you've touched on. The other good Sydney two-year-old Peltzer isn't heading north, so
no.
One you don't have to worry about there. The great question, I guess, for local punters in recent times, Chris, is the tracks. The differences between Doomben and Eagle Farm is a common question I get down here as we head into each carnival. What are the different variances of the two tracks, and especially, I guess, more relevance recently on Eagle Farm and how it's had its issues. We know, I thought it played okay last week. I'd love to get your thoughts. But the differences between the tracks and, you know, what sort of horse are we looking for on each of those tracks, Doomben, Eagle Farm, perhaps?
Well, they are completely different layouts, the two different tracks. From the start with Doomben, Doomben's only got a straight of about 325-odd metres. And if you can, well, basically doing the stats, I can tell you, if you are betting into the shorter races at Doomben, the 1,050s up to the 1,200s or so, generally, if you're not in the first four on the home turn, then you'll probably win about 2% or 20% of races. But you need to be in that first four, and you'll certainly have a better chance of collecting. So Doomben's a track that suits those horses that like to race on the pace, and they can kick away at the top of the straight, pinch a break, and generally be hard to run down. Now, look, they can come from the back more prevalently as you get to the longer races, the 1,600-metre races especially, and the staying events. Whereas Eagle Farm, well, it's it's a bit borderline at the moment. I'm not really sure what to make of it. We had the meeting here last Saturday. There were a few clods flying around. That's common. We all know that. We saw it. The report I get is that it's sort of a little bit soft on top, but it's firm underneath. But I'm starting to form the opinion with Eagle Farm that it really seems to be a horses for courses, because I've tipped horses there last week that looked to travel beautifully in the run, and they just didn't seem to let down on the surface, whereas horses that have won there in the past seem to bob up. And you take a horse like Tyre Zone heading into the Stradbroke next week. He, of course, ran third in the Stradbroke last year, and he seems to run good races at Eagle Farm. So he's better suited there because of the longer run home and the bigger straight, but he also seems to be another one that's suited by the surface there. So, as I said, I'm not really sure where to go with this surface yet. It's a little bit of a tricky one even for me trying to pick a winner, so I'm happier to be at Doomben this week. But, I'm starting to get the impression it's a horses for courses at this stage, but that may change.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, cliches are cliches for a reason. They've been said for a long time. That's how they become cliches. So this horses for courses thing is nothing new. I just wonder if it's more relevant now than ever before, given the issues around Eagle Farm and Doomben's idiosyncrasies, which are quite unique.
Yeah, I think you've got a point there. I mean, I think it's more to do with the surface at Eagle Farm more than the contour of the track. I mean, another horse that you could look at is Rothfire, who, of course, is the favourite for the Actons next week. Rothfire seems to just plough through the ground at Eagle Farm. It doesn't seem to be a problem whatsoever. I'm not saying he wouldn't go that well at Doomben, but he seems to love Eagle Farm. But, yeah, there is a stark difference between the tracks here, the way they're set out. And, of course, at the moment, the way the surfaces are is different as well. So, yeah, it can be a little bit tricky. And then you get away from those tracks and you go to some of these country venues where the straight at the Meadows, I think, is probably longer than the straight at Kilcoy or Gatton.
So just on the track surface specifically, there's been a lot of discussion about it. How do you see it currently? How is it playing?
Well, it's hard. It seems to be playing... I don't know that there's any great bias from the inside to the outside. You'll start to think halfway during the day, well, they're not really finishing fast along the fence. And then the next race will come along and you'll see a horse like Plenty, who won last week for Stuart Kendrick, come flying along the fence and knock them all out. I mean, I'm not a big one when it comes to track bias. I'm more along the lines of tempo. I think track bias can be overplayed. And I'm not really sure 100% where to go with this Eagle Farm track at the moment, because they seem to head into the straight and they come off the fence straight away there, you know, four or five horses off the fence. So you think, oh, well, this must be the place to be. And as I said, Plenty on a horse such as that will come through along the rails and win and seems to finish off at the rate of knots. So you scratch your head again and think, well, what's wrong with the inside? So as I said, maybe there's certain horses, it doesn't matter where they are on the track, that will handle it, and other horses where they are on the track just won't handle it. And that's all I can really put it down to at this stage.
Before I ask you about a few of the races, it's a great day on Saturday. We've been asking people on this segment what their number one form tip is, their process, how they do the form. How do you do it, and what do you believe are the most important elements to take into consideration?
Well, I think there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, you can never just... some people like to base all their form on one particular thing, whether it be times or whether it be weights or whether it be something else. I'm big on the video replays. If you don't watch your video replays, there's certain things you see on there that you just need to pick up. You can read a form guide and read a video comment of someone's synopsis of the race or synopsis of a run. But if you don't watch it yourself, you really don't get a fair idea. So that would be my number one thing. Then obviously the speed map comes into it. I've put obviously emphasis onto the speed map, but unfortunately a speed map can just completely be blown out of the water after 5 or 10 metres if something goes wrong at the start, or a jockey decides to go forward that would generally sit back. So the speed map's important, but it's not the be-all and end-all to me. I love my sectional times, and I love working. I'll rate each race how it was run. Was it a sprint home? Did they go hard in front that enabled the back markers to get home over the top of them? So all of those things are big factors for me. But if I find myself missing out on watching races, I find my form as a tipster tends to deteriorate. So I have to keep watching all those races, and there's a lot of them, guys, as you know.
And from a punting perspective, do you price assess? And if you do, do you have cutoffs when a horse that you might think is under the odds or over the odds that you think is a horse to beat in the race? What's your punting theory?
Not really. I'm not a big one for price assessment. If I think a horse is going to win the race, I pretty much know, you know, in my head if it's a fair price or not, if I'm taking a fair price or I'm not taking a fair price. If I'm keen on one and it's a, and I think it's an absolute certainty and it's $1.90, well, that's fine. But if I'm keen on one and I'm not exactly 100% behind it and it's $1.95, then I'll probably let it go. So I don't actually work prices, and that's because, as Gator will know, with a lot of our best bet stuff, we have to do form days and days in advance, and it's just not worth putting the prices together. You have to go back and change it again as you get closer to the time. He may be different. Gator, you may do that, but no, I don't. I just basically use the grey matter in between the two ears and try and go down that path.
If we get to a stage where we get 38 hours in a day, I'd be happy to go down that path. But, it was already difficult, but then the free noms thing came in down here. But I noticed your noms are massive in Queensland as well, Chris, and you've done Vic form before for best bets in yourself, so you can sort of line the two of them up. So your field sizes are big, Queensland. The dual acceptors seem to be high, and the scratchings are high. Do you have a theory or a reason behind that, and does it have an impact on you?
Yeah, well, it does. It certainly does. The dual acceptors at the moment are particularly high because we have the zones up here, and we've still got certain zones. So where we have a Gold Coast meeting might be on a Friday, and we might have a Saturday meeting at Doomben, and they were in two different zones in the original calendar. So that's why we had so many. We had a meeting recently on a Friday night at Sunshine Coast, which was set up in the early part of the zone. So it had listed races, a couple of listed races there on the Friday night, and we rolled into a meeting at Doomben the next day, which also had listed races as well. And a lot of those horses had accepted for both meetings, and that was because of the original zoning. But I think that's more the issue at the moment. Like, when we get back to normal, we'll be racing at Doomben or Eagle Farm Saturday, Gold Coast on Saturday, and you won't have these Thursday and Friday major meetings at Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, Ipswich, etc.
As a predominantly Queensland form analyst and punter, it's been a lot spoken about this week from Robert Heathcote, and we had the Keurig Commissioner on yesterday, Ross Barnett, about the level playing field in Queensland. Do you see horses improving and raise your eyes? How do you see the playing field in Queensland when it comes to integrity?
Yeah, when I do the form, I would certainly say that sometimes I see horses improve, and I think, well, where did that run come from? It doesn't make a lot of sense. And then you see them drop back to what they were racing like prior to that spike in their form or their win. So yeah, I certainly think there might be some issues there. I have no proof, and I'm certainly not casting aspersions on anybody, but just purely from a form focus, I would definitely say that there are certainly some runs that are a little bit out of the ordinary. We'll see what happens. But yeah, everyone wants a level playing field. Certainly makes life a lot easier for a lot of us, and it's no fun. If it's not a level playing field, it's not fair on the participants that are doing the right thing, that's for sure.
It's a good point, isn't it? And we don't have any proof, but we're listening to people that are involved in the sport, and you're certainly involved in the sport forensically. So, but I think athlete spikes and dips are nothing new.
No.
So, I think we have to be a little bit careful, but it's a really good point you make. What about Saturday, Chris? We need some winners. So I think that's what we're all about. Obviously, I'm keen to get into the Queensland form over the next few weeks for Sky and Oz Racing, so I'm going to listen intently here without copying. What you've already touched on Panna Cotta in the Bill Carter Stakes. What else is on the card on Saturday that that you could steer some punters into?
Well, I think there's a good thing in race one. That's number 10, Gin and Bitters. Now, Gin and Bitters is a lightly raced mare. She's only had the four starts. She's won three of them. Now, they threw her in the deep end at the Sunshine Coast a couple of Friday nights ago. They ran her in the listed race, the Chief De Beers. She didn't quite measure up, but she was far from disgraced, and she drops back to a much easier race on Saturday. Gets two off for Justin Huxtable, so she'll only carry 55 kilos. She looks beautifully placed, and she'll roll forward up on the pace. And as we said earlier, that's the spot to be at Doomben. So I think she'll win the first race. I think she was around 350 or so when I last checked last night. I spoke of Panna Cotta. Well, Mark Unum's got another one in the following race, and that's Celestial Falls. Now, this is an interesting race because two favourites here, Vanna Girl and Rock O'Clock, they both draw car park gates. and they're both, well, it's a difficult starting point, the 1600 at Doomba. They're on a turn pretty quickly. So you've got to go back, we've got to go forward. I think Vanagirl will probably go forward. I'm not sure about Rock O'Clock, but Celestial Falls will get a lovely run. Ryan Maloney jumps on, second up. I thought the first run was good. Sharp Rise in distance won't be any concern whatsoever. She did that last prep and she won at 1800 at Flemington, leading all the way. I think she's just maps beautifully. I think she's got the right form and I think she'll be able to win too. So stick with the Newnham runners in race four and race five, and probably Dawn Passage in the later race, race eight. She's the favourite for the Stradbroke, as we know, and she probably is too good for those, but she's a little bit shorter, race eight, number three. So I'd probably be basing my bets around those ones on Saturday. And a couple of roughies, if it is a leaders track, race two, number four, Langro, and race nine, number 16, Shelwell. One of Tony Gollan's, he's got a sneaky chance at about $15, guys.
Okay, that Fred Best Classic, the feature. Yep. Hightail Exhilarates, so they are likely to run because they are now pretty much guaranteed to run in the Stradbroke, and Dawn Passage needs to win to get in the Stradbroke, doesn't it?
Yeah, just about does. Dawn Passage will need to win the Fred Best, as you say, Michael. And look, it's an awkward sort of draw, but look, she should be able to get across okay. There does look to be some speed there through the Odyssey and Stamp and Bellevue Hill, etc. So her form is just better than these, and that's why I said earlier on, the Sydney form generally proves to be too strong, or I think it will be here. She has been up a little while, but no, she's only been up for four starts, sorry, and she's won her last two, so she's still tracking along nicely. She certainly wouldn't be coming down the other side of the mountain yet, only four runs in from a break.
Chris, we look forward to hearing all of your selections over the next couple of weeks, and it's good to get an insight into the Queensland tracks and what we're looking for, especially over what will be an abridged but still nonetheless exciting Winter Carnival up there. Appreciate your time this morning.
No, it's a pleasure, guys. Thanks very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
He's a very, very astute judge up there, as you know, only too well, Gator. Mm. Just a quick one. I know you're going to be on with Hawley a little later, but you've got your Oz Racing form tips out. Caulfield Saturday, what's caught your eye?
Look, I don't think there's any reason why Sikorsky can't win again. You know, he was only third up the other day off such a long break. And he was quite a soft winner, so there's just not a lot of depth to the opposition. So he looks the standout on the card. In Black Figures, that's probably fair enough. There's a couple that I think can run well at a price throughout the day. I think Girl Tuesday is probably a shade of overs in the last. She arguably could have won her last two with Even Luck, and I think if that was the case, she'd probably be about 350. So you're getting double that near because she's not winning. But it's not her fault. She just keeps running to the backside of other horses, which will stop you. Look, it's a good little card. I think the key to the race meeting is a dry track. We've been quite wet, which is uncharacteristic this time of year. I'm reading that we're breaking records for rainfall over the last decade, which is obviously great, given the recent events of bushfires and so on. So it's hard to complain. But a dry track, we'll see some sharp improvers. We saw it the other week at Flemington, I think, and there were some big price winners. So hopefully we can find a couple of them.
Just last one before I let you go. When you do your form, how much is that? We've spoken in the past about almost intangible factors, and that's a prime example of wet track form coming onto a firm track surface.
Yeah, well, you just have to forgive them. If they don't get through it, they don't get through it. Now, there's some over recent weeks that have still been early in their career, so we're still sort of building a profile on them and building a knowledge base, if you like. What we've come to the conclusion of in recent weeks is, horses like Pacadali, who's been around a bit, he's probably not a great example, but he's just not as effective on heavy ground, and they're genuine heavy ground. Like that Flemington track last week, they were getting right into that, which doesn't happen there too often. In Caulfield, you know, with the rain during the day, the meeting prior was significantly rain affected. So you're going to see some sharp improvers. I think horses like Pacadali's double figures. A horse like Sizcraft will improve noticeably on dry ground as well. He's double figures. So I think there's a few there that we can tie in, and hopefully we get a reward. That's the plan.
Love it. We'll be listening a bit more intently with your thoughts with Gareth Hall a little later today as well. Good to see you, Gator.
Pleasure.
We will speak later in the week. David Gately, one of the best in the business, joining us for the homeschooling punting style. We'll take a little break. During the break, we'll get the latest from Trent Langscale. Then when we come back, we'll have a chat to Kelly Schweder, speaking of big-name trainers up north, and also still to come, trial files and Mickey Gill.